go ahead and call this meeting of the Jacksonville Taxation, Revenue, and Utilization of Expenditures, the TRU Commission, to order December 8th, 2022. We will do a quorum call. If you will please identify yourself. I'm Raymond Day, Vice Chair.
Bruce Tyson, CPAC 4.
Tommy Carter, Council Auditor's Office.
Dr. Chambers, TRU Commissioner.
Jeff Clements, Council Research.
All right. I do not see any members of the public present for public comment. We do not have a quorum, so we're unable to approve the minutes at this point.
Actually, you do. We're down to five members.
You're right.
So three of five is a quorum.
So we do have a quorum. So let's, if we could quickly review the minutes from the October 6th, 2022 meeting of the TRU Commission.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
The minutes of the November 3rd, 2022 TRU Commission meeting. Is there a motion to accept the minutes?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
The minutes of the October 6th, 2022 and November 3rd, 2022 TRU Commission meetings have been approved as presented. Next on the agenda is the auditor's report. Mr. Carter.
Thank you. Through the chair to the commission, the council auditor's office released four reports since the last TRU Commission meeting. Report number 736C, which is the follow-up on the police and fire pension audit fund. Fund audit was released on November 14th, 2022. This report was the third follow-up on the Police and Fire Pension Fund audit. And from that, the original audit, there were three findings from the previous follow-up, which was 736B, that were still outstanding. It was a final compensation for non-drop retirees. There's an issue with the early retirement date and coming up with the right date in which members began participating in the drop program, and then the COLA payments were inaccurate. Those are the three findings. As far as this follow-up, all three of those items found that they were those items had been resolved, and so all the remaining issues, there are no more remaining issues, so this audit is to be closed. No further follow-ups. There's no questions on that one.
Question.
Okay.
So this audit was restricted to the findings of the previous audit, and this is not any sort of an evaluation of the condition of the pension fund.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
Okay. Report number 861, which is the council auditor's 2022 and 23 budget summary report. It's a special report. This was released on November 17th. And this report is basically a summary of the City Council's actions taken during the budget process, as well as any impacts on the Council Auditor's Office recommendations to the Finance Committee. Just as a overall note, the city's total budget for fiscal year 21-22, including independent agency authorities, is approximately $7.7 billion. And as you know, there was a millage rate decrease this for the fiscal year 22-23. There's an overview of significant council actions. The council approved increased funding for the Public Service Grant Council by $2.8 million to $6 million, and for the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville was increased by $1.3 million to $5.2 million.
$2.8 million increase for the public service grants?
Correct.
And the Cultural Council grants?
$1.3. To a total of $5.2 million. And that's all I have on that, unless anybody has any questions. Okay. The next report is another special report. It's the Council Auditor's Office. Council Auditor's Office fiscal year 2021-22 annual report. Basically, this is the this report. This was released also on November 17th, and this report is an overview of the past year's work in the Council Auditor's Office. Basically, overview of it. We issued three performance audit reports. The legislation team reviewed 540 legislative bills. Some of the additional, the result of the benefits don't always see, but you know, we try to place the city in a better position. Examples include the addition of a clawback provision in the shipyards development and limitations on potential future payouts related to the Gator Bowl, and then the annual fees to ASM, which is the person that handles the venues. Additionally, the office is responsible for reviewing the budget, and our review of the mayor's proposed budget resulted in recommendations that increased revenues by $2.7 million and reduced expenditures by $0.2 million, which created savings totaling $2.9 million. The special projects team issued six special project reports, and then those are special reports include the quarterly summary report, the budget summary report, and then our annual office annual report. And then in addition to that, the special project team works on, you know, any questions that on projects or from council members, research items from council members, things like that. And if there's no questions, that completes my report on that. Okay.
Any questions? With the arrival of the chair, I will turn the meeting back over to the chair, Daniel Henry.
Thank you so much, and apologies for my delay. 95 was not cooperating with traffic. I apologize if you've already done so, but have you already covered the executive summary on the budget summary report already?
I have, but that's okay.
Okay. Did you also mention the fact that I had a conversation with Joy Grivey about a month ago, actually, at our last meeting, and he had mentioned that the city was now in a position in the next quarter to actually start doing their quarterly summaries. Is that information that's also been shared with the Council Auditor's Office as well, or is that still kind of in the
No, air? I believe it's my understanding that we'll be getting information with the first quarter of the fiscal year.
Okay.
So we're looking at the fourth quarter, but the fourth quarter obviously won't have projections, which is an important piece of the quarterly summary. So they're going to begin with the first quarter of the fiscal year is my understanding.
Okay.
So.
And then based on that, he also had mentioned that they weren't going to do a look back to the 2 years that have already passed because those fiscal years are already over. So when they start in the first quarter, it'll be based on the current fiscal year that we're in that began in September.
October. Yep.
Were there any points that I think, you had mentioned in the executive summary on the budget summary report that you wanted to highlight? You probably already said it, obviously, but.
I highlighted the millage rate decreasing, highlighted that there's some significant council actions that the Public Service Grant Council had increased funding of $2.8 million to a total of $6 million, and then the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville funding was increased by $1.3 million to $5.2 million. So those were the main parts that I had highlighted. There's a number of I will say one other thing I guess I missed here. The property tax revenue was up or increased by $98.9 million. So property tax revenue, that's a you know what it's estimated being increasing by, and that's pretty much all I had really highlighted.
The $98 million, is that the total increase, or that is it's the increase on top of what was projected?
It's that's the estimated increase.
Okay.
So with the of course the millage being rolled back, but anything else on that one?
One question.
Uh-huh.
When we rolled back the millage, how much did we forego with that collection?
I don't know. I will read you this. It says, after taking into account the impact from the tax increment districts, net property tax revenue is budgeted at $895 million for the fiscal year 22-23.
I know it probably came up. Sorry, go ahead.
We know that a mill is about $82
million. Yes.
This was 1/8 mill. So this would be approximately a $10 million opportunity cost, so to speak, of revenue that would have been collected that will not be collected due to the 1/8 mill decrease. Mm-hmm. Is that a fair ballpark number?
Yes. Yeah. On the introduction here, it says even with the millage reduction, net ad valorem revenue to the general fund, general services district, went up by $98.9 million to $894.9 million.
Which is almost about an 80% increase over what the last few years average in the mid-50 million range was. So this was a significant increase. And this is just ad valorem tax revenue.
That's correct.
Got it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Uh-huh. One other report is report number 731C, which was the follow-up on the Jacksonville Retirement System. This was released on November 21st of 2022. This report was also the third follow-up on the Jacksonville Retirement System.
This is the general employees.
General employees and corrections.
Okay.
Officers retirement plan. There were six issues remaining from the last follow-up, or from 731C. The six remaining issues from the second follow-up was the automation of pension calculations, deleting deceased members in the plan, the treasurer approving any employees that do something in the pension plan that's in the pension office, that the treasurer would approve it, not just the employee. Segregation of duties, failure to remove access rights, and then updating policies and procedures. On the follow-up, you'll be happy to know that on this follow-up, all six issues have been resolved.
Okay.
Policies and procedures have been updated. They are doing access removal and questioning if people still need access, things like that. So all six issues were cleared. There are no remaining issues, and so this audit will be considered closed as well.
The one of the weaknesses you said that was resolved was the pension calculations.
Mm-hmm.
That's not an automated process; it's a manual process.
There is one manual process that can't really be automated, but for the most part, it's now all automated with the pension system that they use.
And when a pensioner becomes deceased, I'm assuming a loved one would be the one that would notify the city of the passing, or how does that?
Not necessarily.
At least you would hope.
You would hope. But there is a third-party company that all they do really is update the death index using Social Security and things like that. We subscribe to that index, it's a very nominal fee, and it lets people know that when they have, or it lets the pension office know that people have died. Mm-hmm. And that's the company that they use. Yes, sir.
Do the beneficiaries of the pension, do they have the right to take a reduced payout in exchange for a survivor's benefit?
With the employee's pension plan, the survivor spouse, and if the case, children under 18, but usually by that age, it's just mainly the spouse. The spouse gets 75% of the pensioner's pension benefit.
And then upon the death of the surviving spouse, the benefit goes away.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And those assets would revert back to the general pension fund.
And to the pension fund.
As the funded assets to shore up whatever the unfunded liability is.
Yes.
Do we manage the pension in-house, or is it a third party that does it?
It's managed in-house. We have a pension office in the city for both the general employees and, of course, and the corrections. And then you have the police and fire pension fund. But, of course, these funds are no longer
taking new members.
It's on a wind-up basis, which it'll be quite a while, but it's there are no longer any more pensioners coming into this fund.
I think Jeff had his hand up.
Yes.
I was gonna say that both the police and fire and the general employees pension boards hire money managers to actually manage the portfolio, to invest the portfolio. I've heard Mr. Grivey explain that they have 8 or 10 companies that they give each of them a portion of it, and they invest in different sectors. One's in stocks, one's in bonds, one's in international, one's in real estate, and then
cryptocurrency.
Don't know about that. So and then
safest investment.
And then their performance is overseen. I guess they report quarterly to the boards about how they're doing. And from time to time, they will change a manager if they feel like they're not performing well enough. They'll put out an RFP and hire another money management firm to take over that portion of the assets.
Okay. Thank you. Oh, yes, sir. Yes.
That plan also has an advisory, general employee pension plan, advisory committee, and a board of trustees.
Yep. And the advisory committee is made up of employees. Yeah, that's elected by employees.
Ah.
I was on the advisory committee for 6 years and on the board of trustees for 3 years.
Mm-hmm. What's it like?
A lot of numbers thrown at you.
I bet.
We did several. Jeff was talking about managers for the funds, and we did several RFPs where you get these big companies that come in and spend a whole day giving you what they'll do for you, etc. And then you have to just go through all that material. Sometimes it would get a little bit overwhelming because they're talking about billions and billions of dollars, and most of us don't think in billions of dollars, But I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a learning experience when I first started. And then we were right where they started to talk about doing away with the pension and going to the 401k or whatever time. So we were on the edge of that. And I think 2 years after I finally retired, I was no longer on the board of trustees with us. So I don't know, After that's when they changed, I think it was 2020 they changed to.
No, I believe it was 2017 or 18. That's 18. I think it was effective maybe October 1, 2018.
My discussion on that, too.
Just a little bit.
That concludes my report if there are no other questions.
All right. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. One thing we haven't talked about in a while, particularly after the passing of Commissioner Roberts, is how we would like to not only deal with legislative tracking in the future, but we probably also should discuss how to deal with the audit committee as well, because in essence, it's kind of been defunct for the last year. And in terms of legislative tracking, Commissioner Roberts was very passionate about going through those bill summaries every 2 weeks to look out for bills that are of interest that the commission would probably want to look at. Are either one of those committees of interest of the commissioners that they may want to take on or have an interest in?
I'm interested in doing the bill summary, which would be the legislative tracking committee. I'm just concerned. Jeff, those come out every 2 weeks, right?
Correct.
The bill summary that has been filed?
Yes.
I will tackle that. I will do my best to take that on.
Okay, thank you, sir.
A few other things that are beginning to crowd my schedule. But
just a little bit. And we can take it easy. I mean, obviously, the committee in and of itself, as it was before, was just Commissioner Robertson.
And I may not be as discerning as he was about peeking through some of the details.
But the goal is just to make sure that we don't have that gap of knowledge, because one of our mandates is for us to be able to give advice on pending legislation that has a fiscal impact. So that gap has to be filled in some way.
And usually the bill summaries on that spreadsheet, it will indicate if there's typically, because I've seen, and when it comes to the council agenda, the summary in that bill, that item on the agenda, will indicate if there's some sort of an appropriation or monetary as opposed to a land use or some other policy. So
yes, there is to the extent that we can discern what the fiscal impact is, we include that. For things like appropriations, it's easy. I mean, that it does what it says it does. There are other things where you enact a new policy that might take more time by city employees, which has a cost, but it's, you know, hard to quantify what that might be.
Sure.
So we don't always include a fiscal impact if it's more general and not something very specific in the bill.
I will do my best to take that on.
Okay. Anyone interested in audit? Or me? Okay. I was pushing my luck too far. Well, that may roll in.
That has not been an active committee anyway, has it?
No, the last time it was active is when I was chair of it. Well, we actually had like meetings and stuff, but that was pre-COVID and when we were meeting upstairs.
Exactly.
And we would have the meeting before the full commission.
Yeah.
Meeting before the meeting. But they were fun though. Sorry? Yeah. But rolling into kind of chair's comments, I did notice that there was a new appointment that was filed by Council President Freeman for one of his seats on the commission.
Yes.
Has that individual gone through rules yet, Jeff?
Not yet. I believe he goes through next time around.
Who is this appointee?
What is his name?
Is it Thomas Harris?
No. Bradley?
I'm horrible with names, so I would have to go back and look.
Let me look and see if I can find it.
Because I have referred a few people to Council President Freeman to request appointment.
In addition to that, I had a conversation with the CPAC president for downtown, Kim Pryor, and she had mentioned that they were going to deal with their appointment as well, but I hadn't seen a filing since then, so I didn't know.
It hasn't been filed yet, but at their last meeting, the Urban Core CPAC, well, actually, she sort of designated herself to be their appointee, and I just sent her earlier this week, I guess, the link to the application form, so when she fills that out and sends it in with her resume, then we can get her appointment started.
Okay. And that is that just a bill that's introduced on by the council president, or does that have to go through an extra step before that's official?
No, it's once the CPAC tells us who their nominee is, then we file the bill with that name, and then it goes to rules for their interview.
Okay. Cool. So within the next month and a half, we may have two additional new members, which
Very
is...
good. I'm glad to see Council President Freeman willing to make an appointment.
Yeah, because we're down to two of the six. But with Urban Core possibly solidified, what's the remaining CPAC that's still...